Welcome everybody. Hey Sarah, hey Siki. Do you guys still have your jobs? It's November 21st. What time? What? It's 10:12 a.m. Pacific. You guys are CEOs. You still have your jobs?
I had like a
Yeah.
free hour in my day, so I did a stint as interim CEO of OpenAI, because I heard they were kind of on a roll type thing.
I don't know if they'll have a job,
But
but I did just get a Google Meet invite, so we'll see.
that's great. But Siki, I know that like on you on Twitter, I honestly don't know if half of the stuff that you're saying is actually factual or not, but you're the
Many.
most one of the best people that I think that anybody should follow. But why don't you give us an update on obviously we cannot not discuss what's happened in OpenAI and with Sam's departure. You want to give us a rundown that we could kind of dissect a lot of the stuff?
Sure. Yeah, probably the wildest 72 hours of Silicon Valley history. But Friday, I think around noon, news got out that Sam Altman was dismissed as the CEO of OpenAI by their board. And that is obviously shocking news. Over the weekend, more news got out where they were trying to get Sam back because everyone's upset about it. I think on Sunday, Sam went to the office to talk about terms for coming back. At first, Sam said he didn't want to come back, I think. Then news got out that the board agreed to resign and then agreed to not resign. They kind of waffled on it. And then a few hours later in the evening on Sunday, Emma Shear was announced as the new interim CEO of OpenAI, replacing Amir Marathi, who was previously their CTO and head of product, which was also shocking. And a few hours after that, Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, announced that Sam and GDB, I'm gonna say much George, what's Greg Brockman,
Yeah.
joining Microsoft to lead a new advanced OpenAI division. And a few hours after that, Ilya Sutskever, who was known or is reported as one of the people originally complained to the board and apparently instigated this whole thing. We don't know how much of that is true. Turned again and said, "I regret my participation in this." And now 747 out of 750 OpenAI employees have signed a letter to go to Microsoft unless the board dismisses themselves and Sam and GDB, Greg Brockman, is brought back. And that is where we are. I think the latest news is that apparently they have not been in communication since Sunday, and it's a Tuesday now, and they're finally talking to Sam about negotiating terms for his return. So that's where we are.
I think the big news is going to break on Thanksgiving Day about whether Sam returns or not, just to make the lives of all these reporters who have to report on this as stressful as possible. That's my prediction.
And a nice friendly family conversation about what OpenAI is. Maybe this is a whole press event for everybody in the world to know what AI actually is. But it's been like pretty crazy. Like I think even like Elon reported, like it's been crazy on Twitter. I know we're all big Twitter users. I'm definitely more of a consumer. You guys post a lot of stuff that I follow you guys, and you guys are hilarious. But I think that some of the winners out of this, you could definitely say for sure, Elon, as far as Twitter's engagement, has been just rocket solid.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he covered up his like anti-Semitism, or
Yeah.
from being like
Yeah.
everyone boycotting Twitter and realizing he's like hugely anti-Semitic to like now all we're talking about is AI. So that was a big win for Elon Musk and
There wasn't
anti-Semitism.
there was another thing that actually did happen that should have been bigger news. And I know a little bit about it, but the Cruise CEO stepped down, which is a pretty big thing. Like if you're especially in your, if you're in San Francisco, so Cruise is a self-driving car company, and he kind of buried his departure resignation on Twitter in this news. My wife used to work for Cruise, so I know a little bit about that. And so that was kind of interesting. I wonder what other stories have been kind of
Yeah.
buried.
Well, Daniel Kahneman, who's the co-founder and president, I think, of
Yeah.
Cruise, also resigned a day after on Monday.
That's right. Yeah.
And I think one of the things that, and this is like pure speculation and no one's talked about, is this happened like a few hours before Emmett Shear was announced as interim CEO. And Kyle and Emmett, they were co-founders of their last company.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, right. Right. That's so, right. That's
and
right.
Kyle was, yeah, they were co-founders of Justin.tv along with Justin Kong, and Kyle was famously one of their best engineers. So I mean, there, if this was related, that could be one huge show up. Hey, I come join OpenAI, be the CTO, and
yeah, that'd be something. I think the crews had its own problems.
Yeah.
They actually got their licenses revoked all in San Francisco.
That's right.
So I think they had he had his own pressure, but who knows? But do we want to kind of get into the OpenAI? Like, can anybody actually describe their, like, even what type of company they were? Why this board was different than a normal, like, C Corp for-profit board? And then also, which I don't think that, and I also had to even dig deep into this, like, how were employees even getting equity? I'll take a stab at if nobody knows it.
Yeah, I know vaguely. Why don't you go take a stab at it and I'll supplement.
So the OpenAI actual company was not a standard C Corp, which is typically all of these Silicon Valley or just any technology company are C Corps that are registered in Delaware. The reason that they're registered in Delaware is because it has probably the most friendly business law. So everybody's trying to protect the company, obviously. There's also for the board of directors, as long as you have like some directors and officers insurance, nobody's personally liable for majority of things. So there's no real risk, which you don't want to have board members having real risks for the company that they're not necessarily like in charge of all the decisions and all of that. And so that's typically what, like, and I'm sure that all of our companies here are Delaware C Corps. Correct me if I'm wrong here. But OpenAI was a little different. So OpenAI was a non-for-profit. I don't know the exact non-for-profit corporation that they were, but they established this, and this is also when Elon Musk, he co-founded this with Sam Altman, and it was, the whole idea was AI can do, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Siki or Sarah, like AI can potentially like ruin mankind, and so they wanted to create this like corporation that was set out for good. And so the board was not for profit, and the board actually had the mandate that and this is where I think a lot of the reason that Sam Altman ultimately was fired, but they had the continued charter that if, and there's a few different things in there as well, like it was basically like they could do no harm to like mankind, and also I think there was something even crazier in there, is like if there was another company that got to AGI, like full human, like the computers are smarter than humans, they would all have to resign. And then also what happened was there was I don't know if it was a second corporation that was set up, but there was a for-profit corporation.
Subsidiary. Yes.
Yeah, a subsidiary of OpenAI, right, that I don't believe had its own board, right? They didn't.
So the for-profit organization is called OpenAI LP, and it is technically a limited partnership.
Got it.
Similar to a venture fund. It's actually really odd. And there is one general partner, one GP as part of a limited partnership, and that is the board of the OpenAI nonprofit. So they have general partnership control over it. Every employee and shareholder was a limited partner in the LP. And the reason why they set it up that way is that everyone's compensated on what's called a cap profit structure. So you get returns in your stock, but it's capped at something like 100x. all the residual returns then goes back to the nonprofit for the benefit of humanity. That is technically how it's set up.
Right. So the board was a little different. So in a normal C Corp board, all the board directors are supposed to be acting for the best interest of the stakeholders. So typically that is mostly the shareholders to create the most shareholder value, which is typically to create the most free cash flow you possibly can. But it also does include stakeholders as well. So that includes employees, that includes partners and everything like that. That's the mandate of a normal C Corp, but this is different as far as a nonprofit. Nonprofits are supposed to do good in the world and all of that. And so I think that, and I'm going to butcher this, so I'm not even going to try, but like for OpenAI, and maybe you guys could jump in here, it was basically to like create this amazing technology that everybody else can use, but to not destroy mankind with it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the, like, look, OpenAI, their board structure is clearly really unusual, especially for, you know, the kinds of founders who listen to this. But I think what's interesting is like this can actually happen to founders of just normal C Corps. Like, yeah, you know, look at Travis at Uber. Plenty of founder CEOs get fired by their boards. And I think what might be interesting to kind of talk through is like how to prevent that, or if you can even prevent it. Because I think this is bringing up for a lot of founders like the realization that you actually do have a boss and it's your board and they can fire you.
Yeah, this is fairly unique, right? I mean, this is where having shareholders is helpful because you can actually understand and how the control flows through your company. The case of a nonprofit is quite different. The board, and I've talked to a few people about this, is basically whatever the board feels like doing, right? They are not beholden to the whims of a shareholder. You can't, outside people technically can't even vote them out because there are no shares. And so one of the takeaways here, you really want to understand who actually controls your board and how it's actually controlled. And so typically on the board, as you both know, you have a board structure consisting of preferred board seats and common board seats. And yep, as long as you have control or understand how control flows, you can prevent things like this. And I think as an investor or a founder involved with OpenAI, you're probably asking yourself, what needs to change so that this can't just randomly happen? People are putting in tens of billions of dollars and this organization is pretty much beholden to none of them.
Right. It's really the entire board without them, but also they obviously had a mandate that they had to agree to. And this is also where I think that for our boards, it gets kind of murky because we're, as a CEO, so as a founding company, you'll typically I would suggest like having like the founders on the board, and even before you get your first investor, say they may join, they may not join, but essentially you have people that it's more informal when you first like start a company, but you still have to have informal board meetings to approve certain things like stock grants, which is typically all a board really approves in the first like couple of years. Mm-hmm. But then as you bring on like a venture capitalist, you'll have maybe some more formal things, like you're approving the budget for the year, which is still kind of a little of an informal. And then as you add more and more things that pop up are like potential acquisitions. And then ultimately, like what the board for C Corp really, well, for any board, I guess as well, is that they are really responsible for the hiring or firing of the CEO. And outside of that, the CEO has pretty much, until you get to like massive boards where you have like audit committees and like compensation committees and stuff like that, like, pretty much that the CEO has like pretty much full reins over the entire company, and the board kind of decides if they're doing a good job or not. And then the only real powers that they have is to fire them and then hire the new CEO. And that kind of works fairly well. I would say that I'd kind of throw in that as you get more VCs that have differentiation or differing opinions, but also they came in at a different stage. I think the earlier investors are probably going to be more aligned with the CEO. If you think of because they've invested closer to in any company C Corp, you have a preferred stack. So any investor that invests, they are going to get at least 1x liquidation preference. What that means is that they are going to, if the company sells, they get their money 1x out before anybody else does. And so the earlier investors are more aligned with the CEO and the rest of the team who have common shares. And so, but the later you go on and say you've done a Series D or Series E, you may have people that, like, really important decisions that come up are like to go after an acquisition, or you're going to sell the company and something like that. And maybe somebody that put in at, say, like a 500 million post, they just put it in. They're like, I want to see this ride out until you guys are a $2 to $5 billion company. And the CEO is like, we're not going to make that. And also the Series A person's like, I just want to get my money out as well. And so I'd say that those are probably the most contentious things that you have in like a C Corp. But ultimately, everybody is like pretty much aligned with like the best interest of the company. Now, I will say, and I'd love to hear you guys' opinions, you get some really crazy, like differing types of personalities in the board room. So, and this is actually, I think, kind of goes into what OpenAI potentially have. Like, you have like OpenAI, what like they had some really big, like we have Sam Altman, who has done so much. You have the CEO of Quora and all of these people who are
Joseph,
like,
Gordon-Levitt's wife, who's no one's heard of, and right, some other woman who no right one's heard of.
But what I could definitely say is that from my experience, so like I had John Doerr on my board, and so I would say that other board members would kind of try to maybe get in good, or like seem that they are like take a lot of the board's minutes just to seem like they're smart and all this. So there's,
oh, that's horrible.
It's a reality, because that's their careers as well. And right. So what I want to basically just say is, like, there's so many different like things and people. And when you all get together as a board, you all think this thing's going to go and be to go to the moon and everything. But when shit hits a fan in whatever different way, you have so many different personal interests that you're not supposed to bring to the board, but that's what happens all right the time.
I mean, people are rumoring, this is just one of the many rumors about OpenAI, that, you know, Adam D'Angelo, who's the CEO of Quora, like Quora kind of launched a competitive AI marketplace for app creators, and then OpenAI launched theirs. And that's part of the drama of what Sam Altman withheld. And so, like, there's a rumor that Adam D'Angelo was actually just acting in his own best interest. Now, that hasn't been substantiated, and it, you know, we still need to learn a lot of the facts. But I think it's totally true that board members are humans, and they will come with their own biases and conflict.
Yeah.
Even in a traditional C Corp, when they're supposed to be acting in the best interest of the company, they may have things that just influence them to do weird things. So you have to have some checks and balances in place, and ideally, as a founder, even control, so that their, you know, personal biases can't, you know, get you fired.
Do you guys have any stories that maybe anonymize them or not? It'd be better if you didn't, or just friends that you're like, this like anecdotally, I know, like, I think Bill Gates was on the Apple board for quite a while as well. Like, obviously there's a lot of conflicts of interest there.
I think it wasn't Bill Gates, right? It was a CEO of Alphabet at the time, right? Wasn't it?
Eric Schmidt.
Oh, Eric Schmidt. That's right.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Sorry. I got that confused. But like there's a lot of conflicts of interest that happen just naturally, just human behavior. Yeah. Do you guys have any stories?
I mean, that's a pretty good example. And that's a pretty good example of when someone managed your port well, you launch Android and immediately kick off the board. That's what you want to do, right? And in the case of like Adam D'Angelo, no one knows what the motivations are at this point. But like in terms of competitive dynamics, right? Like what has OpenAI killed? It's killed Stack Overflow. What's the closest thing to Stack Overflow? It's Quora. And what did they launch immediately when ChatGPT came out? It was basically GPTs, right? You have Poe, which is a ChatGPT front end. And now we have a marketplace they launched in April with a bunch of bots. And they announced that they're going to monetize and share revenue with their creators of these bots 2 weeks before dev day, which happened 2 weeks ago, a month ago. And so you're a CEO, you're on the board of OpenAI, your main product is going to be inevitably disrupted by OpenAI's main product. And now your CEO just maybe by surprise announced that directly competing with the feature you announced 2 weeks ago. I don't know what you're going to do, but how do you feel about that?
I mean, that just seems like a huge conflict of interest. Like, I'm surprised that the core CEO was on the board, given that they're doing so much that's so directly competitive.
Well, yeah, I could see where it could be beneficial, right? Like Quora is obviously like a really big data stream for OpenAI. Right. So unless Quora was going to build what they built, like it seems like from the outside that it wouldn't be totally competitive, and it actually could be like a really good source of knowledge. And also like Quora just has so much data and how they've structured it and how they like just do everything. I think that it, like on the outside before I created this competitive product, it seems like it's a probably pretty good fit.
Just seems too direct. Like even that though, like, you know, it seems too directly, like, you know, then would the core CEO be talking their own book about you got to use our data as opposed to these other data streams? Like, as the acting CEO, it seems a bit odd that you would be on the board of a company that's so similar or so close in, you know, the kinds of things that you would be working on.
Without shareholders, there's no way to hold people accountable for that conflict of interest, right? Like, if you're unhappy with it, you can figure out what the control dynamics are and select someone different. In this case, what was really interesting is they were able to get GDB, Greg Rockman, off the board, and Sam off the board. Because why? They voted to get the people who disagree with him off the board. Now the board was down to four with Ilya. And I don't know if Ilya's even on the board anymore. Maybe three people could just like get Ilya off the board. They have like absolute control over this, and they could have ways of consolidating your control without any outside influence, which is wild. So back to your question about like, yeah, go ahead.
Oh yeah, go for it. A clarifying point here would just be like the shareholders of not a private company, because a private company, you're not electing the actual board of directors, but in a public company, you definitely would be. Like every single year, typically the board directors get reelected or not, or they step down or something like that. And that's the power of being like a Fidelity or something like that, that they have like influence or something, or you have some of these, in the worst case scenarios, you have like somebody that's just bought a bunch of equity in your company and has a lot of influence, and they're able to maybe oust the board. But in a private company, you don't have that, right? Like the board is basically, you have like named board seats either for the CEO or the actual VCs or the VC firms, so they could like actually appoint somebody like that. But in this case, it was just, they didn't really have anybody. I don't even know how it worked. If it was, were they all named when they created the charter? And like, how would they actually like, how would you get off the board?
The board. So yeah, from what I've been told by people who understand the rules of these nonprofit boards, it is kind of arbitrary, like the board decides, right? So if the board wants to make the board 1 million people, they can do that. They, you know, decide that it's in this case.
You just have to have a majority vote.
Yeah, you just have to have a majority vote, right? If there's 7 people on the board and they want it to be 5, then the 5 people need to vote out the 2 other ones, which is what happened on Friday. It's wild. They can do whatever they want effectively. But back to your question about like some real world examples, like the one real world example that I think I've encountered that might be relevant to founders of all kinds is when you raise another round, right? Yeah. Because associated with raising another round, usually you're also negotiating the board composition and how that changes.
Yeah.
And so there is examples that, you know, from companies that I'm aware of that, for example, you might not like your Series A investors, let's say, and you're trying to change the composition and maybe bring on some friendlier investors. And here you have a conflict of interest, right? You have new money coming in. Yeah. Maybe the company really needs new money. And of course, the Series A investors want to keep control, but technically they have what's called a fiduciary duty to the company. They need to do what's in the company's best interest. Obviously, what's in the company's best interest would be to bring on new capital. And so how do you navigate that, right? Where you have board members with both fiduciary duty to this company, but also as general partners, you have fiduciary duty to your limited partners on the fund. And part of that is having control of the company, maybe. So that's where it gets like really hairy, and it may be a situation a lot of founders have to negotiate quite frequently associated with a funding round.
Yeah, I also think it's why there's some protection when you're a C Corp for-profit company, because your investors do have a fiduciary duty. And so I actually tweeted something like, makes no sense to me that the board could do this without, you know, clear proof of you know, something that Sam did, like, that was highly illegal, because Sam had increased the value of OpenAI so dramatically that you would really have to show that he, you know, engaged in criminal activity if this were a private company to remove him from the board, because it seems like it's really not in the best interest of the company to remove him.
That's right.
But because it's a nonprofit board, they can do all these things that a normal board can't do. In a for-profit company, your board members have a fiduciary duty. And what that means is there can be real serious legal repercussions if they do something that then can be said, like, look, you did this for your own best interest, not for the company. You weren't acting on behalf of the company. And so that's why these kind of heinous things don't happen, or, you know, a Series A investor wouldn't withhold a great fundraise from happening because they wanted to stay on the board. They just can't, because they would get the shit sued out of them. So, or they, you know, never be able to invest in other companies again. So I think you have some kind of built-in protections with being a for-profit company, that these, you know, we're learning that OpenAI did not.
And that's probably the most interesting part of the story that we don't know about yet, because on the one hand, you can argue that they are doing their job, right? The reason why this work structure is so that it's sort of benefit humanity. It's not just like pure one person taking over, or they're just going to exploit for profit. So that's why it exists. But on the other hand, you know, we don't know what the reason is, right? And here's like an example where there's could be a very real moral hazard where you're not accountable for anything here.
Yeah. And I think this brings up another really interesting topic for founders, especially, which is around like the communications of these sorts of changes. And I think OpenAI was a great example of how not to communicate. The message that the board put out when they fired Sam Altman was so unclear as to what he actually did wrong. But it made it sound like he did something pretty bad. And now it's coming out that maybe he didn't really do anything bad at all and just had a difference of opinion. So, you know, what can founders take away from this in terms of like when they do have big changes to communicate, how to do it right so that you don't have this kind of crazy fallout where, you know, the value of the company and everyone wants to resign and, you know, Microsoft stock even goes down with this news. I mean, it was just so botched in terms of the communications, I feel like.
Yeah. I question why they took so long to really explain themselves, because also you have to think, like, Yeah, they may not have the same like fiduciary duty that like a C Corp has, but also they have like their own professional like.
Well, they still haven't explained themselves. Like the
to worry about, yeah.
The new guy, Emmett Shear, the new interim CEO, is threatening to resign if the board doesn't tell him the reason why they fired Sam Altman.
Yeah, it's a really wild case, and like everybody's, and also. Sam is also being like quite lipped as well on this. He hasn't like completely told them, like maybe the board hasn't actually told them like what they, maybe the board didn't even tell them why he was getting fired and he just got fired. But this is definitely a breakdown in like corporate communications from all angles. Cause yeah, now as Siki brought up, like the 800 employees that you would argue are like the whole value, the $90 billion value of the company, they don't know what's happening. And they're probably looking for jobs at, I'm not sure if everybody would be going to Microsoft, but there's lots of other competitors. Like AI right now is like one of the most hyper competitive spaces. And like, do you want to, even if OpenAI and Sam like rejoins or whatever, like I'm sure they're all of them are getting poached from like the next best, and I don't know the AI space the most, but like they're going to be getting poached from by these like tens of millions of dollars like in equity, and like it could have just been like that could just be because of the lack of like communications to them, where they could have potentially avoided all of this by coming up front with it. And it just kind of shows you, and also there's been so many other companies like unwinded by just the lack of communications, and it just seems like it's just something that you definitely, when you are a larger company and you can afford to have the right communications and team, like you need to get ahead of all of this stuff, because they, even if Sam does, as rumored it is now, is renegotiating to join OpenAI, there's probably going to be, let's call it, but like maybe like 50 to 100 people that probably leave to be like, I don't want to be involved in this shit show anymore, which like they could have at least solved this before, right? Like they could have not fired him, and then, or they could have actually like done a better job of communicating, like, our job as the board was to protect all of humankind, and we felt that Sam was not doing this. And like I think, and I've also heard this on Twitter, that like maybe the first couple hundred people of OpenAI were more towards the vision of like creating like this open and this amazing technology that is going to be good for humankind, and then probably like the next like half or two-thirds were about like maybe getting a lot of money and all of that. But it could have helped out everybody if there was just better communication.
Yeah,
all
well,
around.
I feel like when you're communicating something like this, whether it's firing an individual employee or firing the CEO, you kind of got to play chess here and think out the next few moves. Like, okay, you're going to do this, then how are people going to react? Or how is this employee going to react? What are the possible ways they might react? And then what is my plan in each of those paths? Or if one of those would just be so horrible, maybe you don't do the thing that you're planning to do because you want to avoid that scenario. In this case, it seems like the board had no idea that people were going to react so strongly to Sam Altman's departure, and they were taken really by surprise, so much surprise that now they're trying to bring him back. And everyone's, you know, that Ilya guy is like, oh, I'm so sorry this happened. I didn't ever expect people to be upset about this. And now, you know, there's rumors that he's coming back and he may reaccept the job. So it's like, couldn't they have played that out? It's not that many moves ahead for them to think through that this might have happened. When they provided no reasons for his departure,
this departure smells really bad, right? So I think Adam is pretty experienced here. Ilya maybe, and the initial communication suggests like straight wrongdoing, but then during the the all hand, Ilya said this is the only way for OpenAI to continue on our mission of making AGI something beneficial to humanity, which suggests some kind of mission misalignment. And then they go back and say, well, actually, it has nothing to do with any kind of malfeasance. And today, a story came out saying that it was because Sam had two teams working on the same thing and said two different things about the same person to the board that were different. That's it.
I mean, it's just ridiculous. Like, they had no plan for how people were going to react. And then the talking points have changed.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. And I think, you know, now if you have anything at all, Emmett Scheer says he's going to resign if he can't get a straight answer from the board on why Sam was fired. It's Tuesday. You've had 4 days to explain why you made a world-changing decision and you can't answer it. That either the answer is like so world-changingly horrible, it's like a CIA level national security secret, or someone fucked up real bad, like criminal bad. That's it.
That's kind of what I feel like. Like, there was either so much wrongdoing that it can't be shared because it would just totally destroy everything, or there was really no wrongdoing. It was like this, like, oh, I told two people the same thing, like made up kind of reason. And now they're trying to cover their ass of why they fired this guy, maybe purely for personal gain or these personal biases.
Let's turn this back on founders. And Sarah, I think you brought up an interesting point. Like, you need to think forward. So, like, when you guys are like, and obviously we've all fired people before, like, how do you message this to the rest of the team? Like, thinking that, like, say you're going to fire like one of the most important people in your team because of whatever reason. Like, are you open with the rest of the team? Do you go into deep detail, knowing that potentially, like, say this is a very likable person and people have a lot of respect for them, but you know it's for the greater, like, good? Like, what do you do in these circumstances?
I've always had a very clear comms plan, like, for the entire day or week of events, especially for, you know, when there's a departure of a beloved team member, or like we've had to do a layoff and, you know, not a lot of people, but we've had to let multiple people go. We did a layoff right when COVID hit, for example. And it was like every moment was scripted out in terms of who we communicated to and when and how we communicated things. And then we anticipated what people would ask. And we then equipped, you know, we either prepared answers or we equip managers with answers to those questions. I think, you know, you have to balance, especially when you're a CEO and you're letting employees go, you don't want to share personal details related to their performance. You don't want to harm them in future job prospects or anything like that. So we always make it a policy that we're not going to share any specific details when we let someone go about, you know, the reasons as to why. But we will share if it was the company's decision or decided to leave, unless they've asked not to, and that's been part of the negotiation, for example. But usually we'll say, like, you know, this was the company's decision, or this position was eliminated, or, you know, want to provide some information as to what happened.
Everybody wants to know.
And then also assure people that, you know, their job isn't next, assuming it's not, and really anticipate, like, they're going to be scared now about their position and their job. And they may start looking for another position. So you may have to anticipate now some attrition from this.
Yeah.
So we never like to be taken by surprise as to what the next moves might be. So kind of thinking through, now people can always act irrationally. We also kind of flag those, like, we think this person is going to act irrationally and file a lawsuit. We should treat this one with extra sensitivity, have some extra people in the room when the news is delivered. Like, you don't want to be surprised at what the possible next moves could be. And you want to have an answer for any of them. That the answer may not be wonderful, but, like, you want to anticipate what could come up.
Siki, what do you do?
We are a little bit more transparent. We do explain in broad strokes, like, what part of the performance misaligned with our expectations. And one of the things we do too is
you do?
In parallel
really?
With communication. We do. In fairly broad strokes, and if people want to learn more, they can talk to your hiring manager. So we've done that in the past. I mean, our thinking here is that the team kind of deserves to know, like they're going to be wondering, and for us to just say, yeah, we parted ways. It's a lack of transparency and clarity that I think we owe the team to not have. One of the things we do.
What do you do? I was going to say, what do you do? Because so like, say you have like a beloved, like VP engineer that's been there from the founding of the company. And he or she is like, everybody respects them and thinks the world of them. Like you would actually go and be like, we parted ways because their performance didn't meet our expectations. Like you'd give that sort of level of detail.
So that actually happened, but you know, really depends on the situation. So a few things, right? If it is really true that your VP engineer is super beloved and you're still doing this, I think the problem was higher up the stack. Like it shouldn't be as much of a surprise to everyone in the company if you're making this move that someone has performance issues. So you know, my co-founder recently left, and you know, we can go into details a bit, but like it was very much a mutual decision. And we actually co-founded, we both sat down in front of the entire team. We spent hours with the team explaining our reasoning about this. And, you know, from our cultural surveys, the team felt that that was like a huge moment for transparency. That was like a huge moment in increase of trust. The fact that we did that and we communicated so candidly and clearly to the team, and was both of us together. So that's like a pretty special, unique situation. And he's still on our board. We're still really good friends. But you know, in a case where, you know, we're letting someone go, and it is never the case that everyone's like, the person's amazing. And like, I'm the only
person. Yeah, I will say like, for like layoff situation, we've definitely had the situation where we had to explain like the position was eliminated or the company can't afford this person. We love them too. And we, you know, all want to keep in touch, but like, we just can't afford this position. But for a performance-based situation, like we actually haven't had to say anything. Like people know, and people are typically a little bit relieved, honestly. Like they may like the person, but they're like, you know what, this was like, we could see, and we were, a lot of times there's confusion, like why is this person still here, if they're performing differently from other people, or they're always, you know, posting that they're, you know, on vacation or whatever it might be. Like, I think people actually do appreciate that, even if they may be sad to see the person go or they like them as a human, they kind of appreciate that, like, you know, we're not going to just waste the company's money. We're going to, you know, employ people that are working hard and doing their part. And if not, you know, we're going to save that money for the people on the team and the future of the business.
Yeah, I think it's really hard. Like I've had obviously, well, a lot of firings and layoffs. My last company shut down. So obviously, we did multiple layoffs there, and the performance related ones I think are really tough, especially with people like when you start getting larger. Like say you're like 100 people, and you have like this. Let's use the VP engineering as an example, and they are still beloved by so many people, but it's like, say they were just not getting, they weren't listening to like me as a CEO, as far as like, this is the business decision that we have to make, and you have to like do this, but they're still very beloved. I think it's really tough to tell people the honest truth. Because you naturally are going to lose people. Also, you do want to, I think you definitely do want to respect people on the way out. Like you don't want to like tell them exactly like what they were like fucking up on, like the rest of the team. Like you want the rest of the team to obviously respect you, and like you want to, like they also are going to know, like if that happens to them, you're probably going to do the same thing to them, and you're going to badmouth them to all their other like employees. So I think with a small team, it definitely to have more transparency, and when you get larger, it becomes even harder. And that's why I'm kind of even just like thinking about like the ChatGPT thing, right? Like like let's say that Sam, so one of the theories right now is that he was having too many like other dealings outside of the company. So comparing, I know this is a probably a false like comparison, but like comparing it to like what Adam Neumann was doing in his like personal dealings versus like what he was doing at WeWork. So like if you think of like Sam, like I think that he was looking to start like a phone with somebody else, and he was looking to do a lot of other things, which completely like for one take away from his like full-time job at like running one of the most influential jobs. And this is all speculation. I'm not trying to say that this is actually the reason that he was let go. You don't necessarily like the people that have followed him so much. Like I think it's hard to like tell people the honest truth, because you're going to have people that just are going to follow them like no matter what. And you kind of don't want to badmouth everybody. Now, to be clear, OpenAI's, regardless if that was the truth or not, their communications like to the rest of the team were terrible. But I would just take the other side as far as like sometimes you just kind of can't. And also there's like a lot of legal reasons you can't tell like the entire team what exactly happened. And not that anything that I've heard in this case with OpenAI is the case, but you're going to have a lot of the people who believed in them, and you still want to reinvigorate them with a new leader. Now, for having a non-for-profit board is a lot different and all of that. So I think that is really hard. But I think communications is really tough. But also, I think, Sarah, to your point, like you also, like if you are going to, like say you're going to fire somebody and they were really great in their job and really respected, you do need to kind of build in like or also layoffs as well. Like you need to build in a certain amount of attrition that you kind of expect. I think in this OpenAI case, they just didn't build in like potentially 100% of the company. I think that the board probably is just like, we can put out the statement and it's like, what are they all going to leave OpenAI? Like this is one of the best companies ever, and like that'd be like, yeah, Sam is like great and everybody's gonna respect him and all this, and to be clear, it's a letter that they wrote to Microsoft. I would be interested to see how many people actually left, but it may just be now it's kind of over.
I think everyone's in a holding pattern right now, but the other, like, they didn't have a plan for who would succeed.
Yeah, no, it was a complete like mess up, like, all around. I agree.
Named Mira Murati. But then she, you know, the next day withdrew, didn't want that position and wanted to be with whatever Sam was doing.
She tried to hire back Sam and Greg, right, to pass as CEO. And I believe the board replaced her with Emmett because of that.
Right. So she wasn't bought into becoming the new interim CEO. Right. And I think if this was going to have any chance of success, they needed to find that interim CEO in advance. They needed to make sure that interim CEO was truly bought in no matter what came out, and share with that interim CEO, here's the wrongdoing, here's what happened. Yeah. I want to make sure you really want this job no matter what. Find like a Linda Yaccarino type that's going to go to the depths of hell for you and tarnish, like just light their entire career on fire for you. Those people exist. They may not be the best CEOs ever, but they exist. Like Elon found someone like that, like a true soldier. Find someone like that and then get them to rally the new team behind them. You're going to lose a lot of people in the process, but you will keep some people because they will have a new leader to rally around. When there's nobody but this like anonymous board that no one even knows who it is, and they won't name themselves and they want to stay anonymous, then there's no one to even talk to and say, like, should I keep working at OpenAI? They have no leadership right now.
Well, why don't we, I know we all have actual data jobs to get to.
I would
want to end this on this, and we didn't get to this, but this kind of reminds me, even over the weekend, of like the SVB debacle, which also was caused by a complete communication fuck up as well. So for anybody running a company or you're on a board, remember how important it is to make sure your employees and the market and everybody knows what exactly is actually happening. And communications can be something that people kind of push off to the side versus product or growth or like all the other things. But it can be like the demise of as we're looking at potentially now, of a potential company. So I think this is a great discussion, even though that we don't know. Well, tomorrow this will be outdated. So hopefully everybody had a good listen. Thanks for joining, Sarah and Siki. This is great.
Thank you, Kevin. I love this.
Yeah. See everybody next time. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.